Do I get introduced or I just start? Is that a, is there a host here or did I just go?
I
just go? Okay. It's awfully quiet in here. Is this the same room that the infamous Zuckerberg panel was in? Yeah? So, we have this new technology here I'm trying, and you can text message to the screen. So that if you're really pissed off about lousy moderation and questions, you know, my name is Guy, not Sarah. Feel free. So, my name is Guy Kawasaki. I am the managing director of an early stage venture capital firm called Garage Technology Ventures. And I'm also co-founder of a website called AllTop, which is a news feed aggregation site. But I'm not here to schlep my product, and and neither are you, may I remind all of you. So this is a panel about true stories from social media, and I've assembled a group of social media experts, or at least that's what they told me they were. And my original intent was to have an all-woman panel. And then I believe fundamentally in most conferences of this nature, women are underrepresented as speakers. So I thought I would like make this bold statement. But then, yeah, I actually thought that guy's name was E-R-I-N. So I thought it was a woman and I didn't find out till today. And I tried to get him to wear a wig, but you know, that dog didn't hunt in Texas. So, but I tried. So the way I like to do a panel is I like to give them some questions, get answers from all of them, sort of a few of these, and then we'll open it up for you to ask questions. And I hate to say, well, I'll be upfront. I believe that a good panel is entertaining and then informative. Most people believe a good panel is informative and then entertaining. That's why most panels suck. So, I don't know if you're going to learn a lot in this panel, but you will be entertained. Okay, that's my promise. So, I'd like to start by letting each panelist introduce themselves. I could introduce them, but I've been on panels and the moderator just completely screws up. You know, they find some bio from you that's 10 years old and it's like four companies ago. So I like to let panelists introduce themselves. So I'll start over here with Rashmi and we'll just work our way down here.
So, I'm Rashmi Sinha, and I'm...
You have to make love to the microphone, Rashmi. Make love to the microphone. Think Barry Manilow.
Hi.
You don't know who Barry Manilow is?
Barry Manilow.
Oh, my God. How about Barry White? No? Sting?
Yeah.
I'm just messing with you.
So I'm Rashmi Sinha, and I'm co-founder and CEO of SlideShare. And SlideShare is a site for sharing presentations. Are you bringing it up?
No, it's not enough time. We've got seven.
There's no time. Oh, I thought you were going to bring it up. So my background is design, and I think of myself as an accidental entrepreneur. We kind of built something, and then it, you know, people started using it, and then we had to build a company around it. So that's what I do.
Okay, Patricia?
I am Patricia Hanschagel. I owned...
Make love to the mic. I have to... Jeez. Can you hear we're in the back?
I used to own StyleDiary.net. I sold it last year to StyleHive.com. And basically now I just work for them. And my background is in social media, internet infrastructure, and... publicity.
So you cashed out.
Yes.
Okay. Catherine.
Hi, my name is Catherine Finney, and I don't have a problem being loud, so hopefully you'll be able to hear me back there. And basically what I do is I teach people how to be fabulous for less. And I do it through a popular fashion blog called The Budget Fashionista. I also own a couple of other sites as well. And I'm totally an accidental entrepreneur as well. I actually have a degree in epidemiology. That's exactly what my parents did when I told them I was going to start a fashion blog. And started this blog a long time ago, before blogs were blogs, and it really, really grew into this whole other situation. And I'm hoping to share some of my very entertaining stories, one involving Oprah.
What is a degree in epidemiology? Did you, like, go to University of Miami and get a suntan, or what?
No, I actually went to Yale.
You went to Yale?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I still have the loans to prove it. And I went to Yale, and the study of epidemiology is the study of diseases and how they impact populations. So my specialty was HIV/AIDS, which I'm still very involved in, but just in a different way, more on boards and raising money and
cool.
things like that.
Okay.
I'm Laura Fitton, but that's kind of a little known fact. I'm pistachio. And I help make presentations suck less. That's my actual job. I have a business coaching speakers and making PowerPoints less deadly trying. But what happened was that I was kind of a homebound mom in a new city. I'd moved to Boston. I'd had two kids. I'd been out 2 years. I was very indebted to LinkedIn for preserving what network I had. And I started playing with social media almost exactly a year ago. I looked at my husband. I was like, so what is Web 2.0? Seriously. And Twitter is my accidental story that somehow this incredibly dumb, incredibly powerful little app has completely changed my life. So that's my random. I don't know so much about the random things that happen when you're building a site, but I can talk about random outcomes of some of these sites.
How many of you are on Twitter? Wow.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Christine?
Hi, my name is Christina Woodkey, which was mispronounced at yesterday's panel. So you're a wise, wise man guy. I don't even try and pronounce this. Don't even bother. I wrote a book called Information Architecture Blueprints for the Web, but I started a magazine called Boxes and Arrows, which is a social web zine in which people, thank you, write about design matters. I started a company called Cucina Media, and then I joined LinkedIn. So basically, whenever I have a half hour free, I seem to start something else, which is a bad habit to get into. The most interesting thing about me, though, for you folks, is I am a certified mixologist. So see me later.
Where's our drinks?
Yeah, where's our drinks on the panel?
She's a what?
A mixologist.
Certified mixologist.
A certified mixologist?
Like a bartender.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's why I picked you.
This is the panel on bar hacks, right?
Yeah. All right. My name is Erica O'Grady, and I kind of ended up here on accident. I had a photo on my Facebook profile of me holding a ginger in one hand and a knife in the other. And I got a message from Guy Kawasaki that said, are you trying to murder the ginger in that photo? And that's kind of how we started like chatting. And I'm actually a social media expert. And if you'll go to Google, I'm the number one Erica on Google. you're all Googling me now, aren't you? And I'm here to talk about a company that I hold equity in called OpMom, operationmom.com.
Okay, and Aaron, the token man?
The token man, yeah. My name's Aaron Mentley. That's also a little-known fact, but I don't have an alternate ego like Laura does. So I'm more the we sell the pickaxes at Electric Pulp. I think that's Stefan's take, but I'm going to use it. So we're a development shop. Our clients are a little more well-known, perhaps, than we are.
So I'll tell you that Electric Pulp did my two sites, Trumers and Alltop, and I have never worked with a finer development shop anywhere. And so if you have big lucrative contracts, see him after the panel. If you have small shitty ones, you know, you want to see what you can do for $5,000, don't bother him.
We can give you a referral.
Because I need his time more than you do. So I brought him on this panel so that he can tell you the other side of nightmares of working with social media entrepreneurs and how they, you know, change everything all the time. So I'd like to start with you, Rashmi. I'll just go down the line. I'll give you each a really nice softball, but just this panel is supposed to be about these true stories from social media. So you each get to tell one story about this most amazing, surprising, stupid story in social media that you've ever encountered, just to give the people sort of an insight into what happens with social media site owners.
I can tell like
make love to
okay, make love to the mic. So I can tell a creepy story or kind of a cute story.
Creepy.
Well, it is creepy to me. So I'm sleep. It's midnight. I'm fast asleep. I get a call on my cell phone, and this guy with this Australian accent is really angry, and he keeps on saying it's about your site, Slideshare.net, you know, and somebody is impersonating me on that site. And I'm half asleep. I'm like, can we talk later? He's like, I sent you email and you haven't answered my email. He's really, really angry. And then he says, it's not that I'm threatening hearing you, but I am recording this conversation. At this point, I kind of get a little bit stressed. Anyway, I didn't quite understand what was the matter. I said, I'll look at my email tomorrow and then we can talk. So next day, I go in and check my email, and I have emails from him on every email address I've ever had. You know, my old Yahoo address, my Gmail address, every address I've ever owned. He's found it and emailed me on it. And his claim is that somebody's created an account on his name on the site. And I go and look at the account, and it's like this one picture and one comment that somebody has made. And we've dealt with a lot of DMCA issues with slides and, you know, somebody copyright, but I don't quite know what to do about this. I'm like, and he's like, I own copyright to the picture, so nobody can use my picture. So we talked to our lawyers, like, what should we do here? And they're like, well, I guess you could say that the picture is copyrighted. So we're trying to understand why exactly he's so upset. And then we start figuring out the pieces. So basically what has happened is there's these students in Mexico who were, you know, studying in this class, and they were using a textbook from this hacker professor. And one of them, as a joke, created an account impersonating him, saying something to his friend. Well, this hacker professor found it in his Google search and got really, really annoyed that they were impersonating him and saying things in his name. So he's in Australia, the students are in Mexico, we are in California, the lawyers are involved, and he's really angry and saying that, I know all about security, I can take your site down.
Really?
Yes, it was a kind of a traumatic few days. What? To cut it short, I think he got in touch with the Mexican students who said, please take down our account. We never meant to do this. So we took down their account and the story ended.
Was his name like C. Dundee or something?
No.
Okay.
I hope he's not listening. And
did he have a big knife?
I don't know. Maybe he did when he called me.
Okay, Patricia, what's your bizarre story?
Well, I don't know. I didn't have anything really, really crazy happen, but
well,
I think.
Well, then why are you on the panel?
Okay,
you're pulling a Zuckerberg on me. Why don't you just talk about Style Diary?
You have to ask a question first.
I asked the question.
I'm just kidding. I think probably the biggest thing that I can talk about is when I sold the company, and Guy and I are friends, so he knows, but it was 12 days that it took to close. And I mean, I was so excited to sell it, and I mean, it was like laying an egg. I didn't go out and get my eyebrows waxed. I mean, I didn't go anywhere. And I'm a girl, and I live in LA. That's a really big commitment. And so that day, I call him up, or I said something to him, because I was so stressed out. Because you
12 days, right? 12 yeah. days to sell a company.
I didn't know. I've never sold one before. So all my friends like that, you know, the guys that own Caboodle and stuff, they're all like, you know, everyone's kind of rooting me on through this whole process. And I go to him and I'm like, he's like, it's taking forever. He's like, well, how long has it been? I'm like, 12 days. He's like, that's like nothing. So apparently that's the thing. I think that was probably the biggest experience that I got out of actually owning Style Diary. Like the weirdest thing was just that day, this weird like lapse of time in my life where I didn't really shower.
So you didn't shower and you didn't wax your eyebrows.
And then he makes light of it like it was nothing. But yeah, that was mine.
You smell really good now.
Yeah, I do. I sold out. I cashed out, so I shower now.
Well, my story involves Oprah, Sarah Jessica Parker, and a dress. All seemingly unrelated, but you'll see how it's all related. Early in 2007, Sarah Jessica Parker, who is known from Sex and the City and, you know, great fabulous dresser, so forth and so on, paired with a store called Stephen Barry's. Now, why this is really interesting is that Stephen Barry's sells things very, very low price. Like, nothing in the store costs more than $15. So this was a big deal in the fashion community. We happened to get information, so we were able to sort of outscoop some of the mainstream press on this particular issue. Along with that came pictures. Now, we're thinking, you know, these pictures are great. We'll just post them. Our readers will, you know, be somewhat interested in it, so forth. Apparently, these pictures were only supposed to be looked at, not published. Now, that didn't really make any sense to me. Why would you send a blog pictures if you didn't want them to publish it? But that's a whole nother issue. So fast forward, you know, a couple of days and about 200 comments later, all of the comments were sort of lukewarm. People weren't really filling the line very much. They thought they were sort of like, so what? Another celebrity has a fashion line. Why should we care? And Stephen Barry sent us a letter saying that we want you to remove these pictures. I have fired back to them. I don't exactly know why we should be removing these pictures. It's, you know, it's not that big of a deal. So a couple of weeks later, you know, and several digs later, several comments later, and several other blog posts later, this thing really went throughout the fashion community. We get another letter from Stephen Barry threatening to take us to court in New York. Now, for me, I would personally rather spend the summer buying shoes than being in court. Yeah. And as a result, like a lot of our readers heard about this, I threw it back to our community. And I asked them, like, should I remove the pictures? Now, what was interesting about that is that it created this level of engagement that I would have never, ever expected. There actually were people who were thinking about setting up a site called STB, which was Save the Budget Fashionista, for our own defense fund to go against these pictures from Oprah. Oh, the backstory is that Stephen Barry had promised exclusive to Oprah. And we sort of outscooped Oprah, right? So, you know, we went back and forth, and I love Oprah. I don't want to outscoop Oprah, right?
I do.
I know you do. Patricia does. So what happened was, you would think that, you know, outscooping Oprah would be a bad thing. Actually, it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to our site. When Sarah Jessica Parker finally went on Oprah, guess who was number one on Google, MSN, Yahoo for the term Sarah Jessica Parker and her line? And our traffic actually increased fivefold. Our bounce rates dropped 70%. Our engagement has just totally increased, and we've gotten like this huge number of fans, all as a result of like going against Oprah.
So what's the lesson here to
scoop Oprah?
Scoop Oprah. No, I think the lesson is to engage your community. Even when you have problems, throw it back at your community. Ask them sort of what they think of it. We really had this big debate about removing these pictures. You would think that it's a trivial sort of issue, but people really became passionate. It became a bigger issue of sort of the budget fashionista, our freedom to say what we want to say, the freedom to sort of criticize and be open. And the criticism was actually quite fair, but they didn't like it because it did in fact impact the sales too, which was really interesting of the line. So I think the lesson is engage your community. Throw it back at them when you have different issues that you're sort of tackling.
And did you ever hear from Oprah or her people?
Yes, I actually did.
And what? You're probably not on the show, huh?
No, but they wanted to put me on the show.
Yeah.
And we would sort of back and forth with sort of issues, not on the same show as Sarah Jessica. Obviously. And interesting enough, Sarah Jessica also responded to the fashion bloggers as well. I mean, it really became this big sort of issue, much bigger than I expected. But again, it was all through engaging the community.
So the lesson I take away from this is anybody sends you pictures, post them.
Exactly.
Even if they're copyrighted, just post them.
And then make your audience support you for it.
Yeah, and ask. And you know, what you should really do is you should post them and you should buy the domain for Save Your Site in advance.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like, build the infrastructure, get Electric Pulp to build the site.
Exactly.
Garage can fund it.
You know, this is.
Garage
can fund it. Or we can get the t-shirt guy.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a very interesting story. Okay, Laura, can you top that one?
No.
Oh, okay. You can pass the mic then.
The story I want to tell is actually about all of you, because you're all on Twitter. And what's happening with Twitter these days, we all know, is kind of insane, kind of off the charts. I could sit here and bore the hell out of you guys with all my little name drop stories. But, I mean, long story short, how the hell do I know Guy Kawasaki? Who the hell am I to even be on this panel? He slammed Twitter at Gnomedex. I think you should look at it again. And this man's open-minded, because I was nobody out of nowhere. He read my blog post. He wrote back and forth to me for 3 weeks. He listened. He gave it ideas. There's people out there on Twitter. I needed help with my Crackberry, which we all know I'm totally addicted to, the other day. And a guy writes back, and it's some guy named Tim, and he's like, yeah, you're actually screwed. You deleted what you needed, and it's gone. And so I click through, and I want to follow him back. I'm really earnestly trying to follow people back, and I'm really behind on it. And I notice his bio says he's the executive producer of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm like, oh, what a wicked jokester. That's pretty funny. But he was.
So that's who I have for tech support on my BlackBerry now, evidently. But you all do too. I mean, the people that are coming together on Twitter, it's like this weird brain tap with a siphon and tubes and hoses and interwebs and shit, excuse me, all over the world. And you can connect with people. And I think everybody, I mean, if there's one lesson I could share, it's just be yourself on Twitter and let things happen. Don't try and be strategic. You may think, I don't know what my followers really think of me. They may think I'm a trained performing monkey. I got to tell you, everything I Twitter has been going on in my head for 36 years. I just never did it out loud before. And then from the other site, since this was supposed to be a panel about, you know, building the site, and obviously I've never, I mean, my God, you guys have all founded companies. Holy shit. When you're building a site, and this gets to, if you were in Kathy Sierra's talk yesterday, you got to give people something to do.
For example.
How's that working out for you, guy?
I don't have any ads yet.
You got to give them something to do. We get so tied up in like, what could it do and what features can we add and what could it be and our big vision and our big, they don't see that. They see a big playground equipment, and if they can't find a slide to go slide down, they're not going to start playing with it. So you got to come up with something very basic. And so that's Twitter. The deceptive simplicity is, well, what are you doing? I mean, if nothing else, just tell me what you're doing. And then over time, you find your own style. I know people who use Twitter. I mean, Jim Long over here uses Twitter because he travels around with the freaking president and interviews Bob Geldof live on streaming video. You know, I mean, that's his rock star life.
Stand up, Jim. Wait. This is New Media Jim on Twitter.
Shout out.
The only guy I know who travels on Air Force One that I like.
But seriously, like, try and forget for a moment everything you know about your site or your company or your product. And like, drag your grandmother in there, drag your sister in there, drag your, you know, uncle who's never been on email in there. And find one simple use case, one thing they could do that matters to their lives at all. And start there. Kathy also mentioned the Lee Lefevre video on Twitter and said, oh, it's pretty limited, it only talks about one thing. I think it's friggin' brilliant. Because when I here's weird life, right? Like, I now get interviewed about Twitter, and they're like, well, what have you done? I'm like, well, I Twitter a lot. Like, a lot. So her point about the Lee Lefevre video, it's awesome introduction, but it's fairly limited in scope. I would totally use that, because people just need to get started.
Are you like a Twitter ad, or are you?
I know. Any application. No, I'm not getting stalked yet, but we can talk about stalking stories later. Anyway.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you a story, which is going to result in Guy Kawasaki never giving me money.
Everybody on the panel has.
Pretty much. Everybody has that story. So basically, I started Boxes and Arrows. Good Lord, 2000, something like that. Just as a little, you know, design site, because nobody was writing about the stuff. Everybody was writing about how to do a one pixel GIF, and nobody was talking about, you know, how to do interaction design or anything. So I got a bunch of my friends together, and we all started writing stories, and we allowed anybody to send in a story, and we would edit them, which is a shocking thought in the age of blogs. We would edit them, and then we put them up, so they were pretty good. And I would just pay for the hosting. I wasn't thinking about it very much. I was living my life, and, you know, every so often, a volunteer editor would get burned out, and I'd like write on some lists and get a couple other people, and basically I would kind of ignore it. Well, we were sick of hacking movable type, because you shouldn't do that to movable type. It just makes people sad, makes Huffington Post sad, made us sad. And I ran into this crazy Copenhagen guy who was reading way too much 37 Signals, and so he wanted to start a company, and I said, well, I could use a new content management system, and on that I based the decision to start a company. You guys probably all know what I didn't know, which is content management system is the stupidest, most miserable, crappy business you could possibly get into. First of all, there's all these customers, and they want you to do things with your software to make their life better. And they're all different. It would be okay if they agreed on anything, but every single publisher wants something completely different from every single other one, and they all need it right now. And the nonprofits are the worst, because they're on a holy quest. Oh, my God. If I have one wish in life, it's never to have a nonprofit as a customer again. Sorry, David. So anyway, so I'm off doing this, and, you know, Lars, this crazy Copenhagen guy who's reading Jason Fried like it's the Bible, is like, let's put up a job board. And I'm like, there's 17 billion job boards. Come on, let's put up an event calendar. We compromised. We did both, which is, again, not what startups should do. But we threw them both up on boxes and arrows to see what would fly. And then I just kind of ignored it, except every so often I get a call at 6 a.m. from somebody who wants to know why they're being charged by publicsquhook.com. Because, of course, we're Public Square HQ, because that's what Jason would do. So I'm out trying to raise money, and the VC community is very kindly and gently explaining to me why this is a bad idea over and over and over again. And finally, I'm like, okay, we've reached the end. I start talking to a very nice man named Reid Hoffman, who gave me a little home to land in and got to keep my intellectual property, which is why I was only at Google for 4 days, but that's another story.
And you made $10 million, right?
I did not make $10 million yet, but I will later this year. Everybody get on LinkedIn and use it every day, and then I'll go public, and I'll be rich. So what's funny is that my husband's after me to do the taxes, right? And he's like, come on, Christina, let's try to do the taxes not in June this year. So I go through my numbers, and I find out that Boxes and Arrows has made an entire year's worth of a Silicon Valley salary without me paying any attention to it whatsoever. We had built such a fantastic community. They just took care of each other. They edited each other's stories. They checked for inappropriate ads. They checked for inappropriate events. They would like ping me every so often and go, hey, Christina, I think they're librarians, first of all, the IAs are. So they're very polite, gentle people. They take care of each other all the time. So the last piece of the story is my chief editor had moved to left San Francisco, moved to Montreal. He decided that Americans, he'd given up on George Bush, I think, basically. And then he had a family emergency, and he had to move back. And I was able to pay for him to move back, basically, because of the community. I was able to, and I gave everybody who'd worked on it that year, since we put up the job board, a bonus. I just split the money and sent it out. I was just so happy that this community had given me this thing, and then I could give it back to that community.
So why wouldn't I give you money?
Why wouldn't you give me money?
Yeah.
I was spending all my time on this thing, and meanwhile, this other thing I was ignoring was doing fantastic.
Well, we're hearing sort of consistency that it's a lot of unintended consequences, right? You know, you think you have this grand plan, and you have your PowerPoint pitch, and it's exactly what's going to happen, and, you know, you have your financials scheduled out for the first 5 years so that in the 48th month of your company, you know how much you're spending on pencils, and fact is, nobody knows what the hell's going to happen, and that's...
There was one true thing, though. She said it too. It's like, as long as you keep taking care of your community,
they'll take care of you
every friggin' time.
All right, Erica.
All right. So last year, we decided to launch our public beta a week earlier than expected, and because our site houses a lot of like secure information, like we let our moms put their health records or family medical records on the site, we'd spend a lot of time testing and making sure everything was exactly right. So we went ahead and we launched the site, and we did it without any real fanfare. We kind of didn't let anybody know right away. And then after it launched and we saw everything was working fine, we sent out press releases. We told all the moms out there that we'd launched the site, let everybody know about it, and went to bed that night really excited. We felt like we were rock stars. We're like, awesome. We launched the site. This is so cool. So we woke up at 7 a.m. the next morning to the phones ringing off the hook, and we're like, oh, great, Arrington's calling, and he wants like an exclusive interview. This is great.
And it was Scoble.
Yeah, we were really bummed about that. But it was actually our investors, and they were really upset because the site was down. And so we're like frantically struggling. Oh my God, what are we going to do? Our lead developer had just gotten married, and so he's a newlywed, and we kept calling him and calling him and calling him, and we couldn't get a hold of him. So finally our COO, John, like drives over to his house, pulls him out of bed. His wife has never forgiven us, and we get the site back up and going. And one of the reasons that we had launched the site early was that we were feeling a lot of competition from our competitors in the space, and we were being really reactionary. And what we found out was that it didn't really hurt us overall. About 30 days later, Yahoo chose us as a pick of the day, and our signups went from about 10 a day to 5 a minute. So in the end, it worked out okay. But I think the real lesson is that don't feel like you have to be pressured from outside competition to launch something early when you're really not ready.
Okay. Aaron, tell us about launching stuff early and prematurely and technical problems.
Do a search on Google for the worst site on the internet. You'll find something we're associated with. Or go to Uncov and read Ted. Ted does not like us. For our
Ted.
Development.
Yeah.
Ted, what is Ted's last name? Ted from Uncov.
He's just Ted.
Yeah. And we were schlebs. No, if we could back up even further than before, you know, the communities were what they are now, well, like back in the days of forums. We built a site for Tracy McGrady, and we had a forum that wasn't very popular. You know, people really weren't doing much. About a week passed, Saturday at 10 o'clock, we get a call, and it's one of his people is very mad. I got to take the site down. I got to take the blog down. Someone has called out Tracy's mother. And so the response to that was that, you know, it wasn't a good thing to bring that up. That was off record. Well, the next day, the traffic is just way, way beyond anything that I ever had. And it turns out that controversy actually adds traffic. I think that's probably something you know about now. But at the time, that was a new thing. It was moderate. Do not let the community, you know, just say something by themselves. You got to really control that community. And that was probably our first good lesson that that's not what you do at all. Now, obviously, you can take that too far, calling out someone's mother, maybe. I don't know. But it was a sports site, so... That's our story. It actually turned out for the good.
Role, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting experience. I have to apply that somehow. Unfortunately, my mom died. I have to think about this.
You can have my mom.
Yeah.
She loves you.
Okay, so Patricia, we'll start with you so that you know pressure's not always on Rashmi here. If you could do one thing differently about Style Diary, looking back, what would you do differently?
Well, I think one of the things is that when you're building a social network or something, you need to think a lot about how your user is going to engage. Because I think that's migrated. So it's gone from forums to, you know, MySpace where everyone has a page. But now it looks totally different. It could be a blog posting. I mean, TechCrunch hosts this huge conversations between communities, you know. So I think I would have probably put a little bit – I mean, of course, we started Style Diary. We started at the same time as MySpace. So it was like there were no social networks. We couldn't explain it to the media. It was really hard, you know. So in some ways, we were just early. But I think if I was going to do it over, I would think really long and hard about who is my audience and how do they want to interact and engage. You know, not everybody wants to have a profile, put a picture up. I mean, people take pictures of themselves and upload them to pages on my site. I don't know why they do it. You know, I mean, they're very passionate about it. But that's just what they do. And I think a lot of people miss that step. So if I was going to do it differently, I would think a little bit more through the interactive features that they'd want, you know, where the content would be, and ultimately stuff along the technical side.
Okay. That was a boring answer, but okay.
Who here thought that was helpful?
Wow. Yeah, who here thought? Who here,
oh, thank you.
Who here thought it was boring? Who here is too scared to vote? It's a weird electoral system in Texas. Anyway. Okay, what would you do differently?
Well, Patricia, I find you fascinating. I just want you to know that. I think what I probably would have done differently is realize sooner that it wasn't about me anymore. Our site is so focused on myself as a budget fashionista. I think if I could have realized a little bit sooner that it wasn't about me and it was more about the community, our community would even be even larger.
Okay. Laura?
What would I do differently with that site that I founded?
Well, what would you do differently with Twitter? I don't know. What?
Yeah. I'm such a one-trick pony. I should be so embarrassed about that. I would have gotten into social media earlier. It would have been really helpful when I was off on maternity. I joke that I've been under a rock for 2 years. I mean, the social connection of being a work-at-home mom and being able to, like, chit-chat with freaking thought leaders from all over the world through something so informal.
I don't have anybody like that on my Twitter.
Well, no, they're there, though. If you follow them, I mean, that's the thing. If you follow someone and talk to them, at replies go everywhere.
You can,
if you have something to say that's you know, not about you, it's more about them.
You can pimp twitter.alltop right now.
I pimped your site the other day on Twitter.
Go ahead. I'll let you. Go ahead.
So, yeah, no. And I do have to say, nothing to do with the fact that Guy has been awfully, awfully nice to me. I do love Alltop, so maybe I can pimp you for a while.
No,
you know why? You know why? Because it's an RSS reader, but you don't have to know what the hell an RSS reader is. Well, because a lot of the stuff we all do and love and know, you go stand on a subway platform in New York City and you look around you, they don't care.
My mom can use all.
They don't give a. We got to start coming up with stuff that's useful to people, you know? And that's why sites like you, I mean, you guys are hooking women up with what they're looking for. You're giving them information. They read beauty magazines only, you know, those make them feel horrible. Seriously.
All we care about is making things useful for our readers.
Yeah.
I don't care about writing about anything that's not going to help them make their lives better. That's all I care about.
You're not creating a site because you have something to accomplish and something to do. You're creating a site because you're so passionate and you know, and that information you have and your willingness to share it and to bring people together around it is useful. My God, just be useful.
I'm going to cry soon.
Is this a girl's piano?
Christine, go ahead.
Sure. I would have hired somebody who could do math. I feel like math is really important for business success. Yeah. And otherwise, things just kind of played the way they played. I don't know. You can't really spend too much time freaking out about what you did because you're not dead. So, not dead yet. Feeling good.
Okay. Erica.
I think we would have concentrated less on trying to be Web 2.0 and cool and putting up a splash page and getting people's email addresses, because we weren't really listening to our target audience. We were listening to people like you and us. Moms don't have time to fill in their email addresses to wait to sign up to be invited to a site. We would have. Oh, actually, this is for the Pimp Your Nonprofit panel today at 5. but truly, we would have really concentrated on creating community. Maybe even done a web 1.0 type site where we got the community involved and created more content instead of worrying about having moms sign up for a private beta to our great site. So,
okay, Aaron,
are you asking me the same question?
Yeah.
Why?
Or you could say, what should your clients have done differently? Yeah. Since you never did anything wrong.
That'd be more fun. Tell us what guys.
Yeah, give us the dirt. Well, first of all, mention some of your clients so we can know, you know,
okay,
who these bozos are.
Sundance Institute has a great community site that we just launched. In Case, I see some In Case cases. In Case is great. Guy Kawasaki. Just others. Maybe Stefan and Michael could yell some out, heckle us.
What's that?
Oh, HP. I know those guys. It's different with all cases. A lot of times, I would say, and this is probably surprising, I would say plan less, because when we get someone who comes in to us with a full out spec of what they're looking to do, that's, you know, it never turns out that way. You should plan for iteration. You should not plan for a year ahead. And I think that in most cases, the problem is that it's just overthought.
It's overthought?
It's overthought.
Do clients come in with actual, like, screen, you know, the screen should look like?
No. It's different in all cases. And some of them don't know what the hell they want. They have no clue. Others, they do. They want Twitter or they want, you know, Facebook for their bank, you know. But in a lot of cases, someone is telling us what their target market is, what they're going to do, how they're going to use the site. And the only way you can know that is by looking at other examples. And that doesn't take into account the community that you're going to have. So plan less.
Ideally, from a development shop's perspective, what would a prospective client show up with to make your life best and give them the best result?
Again, different in all cases, but now I'm going to contradict myself. Obviously, we want our client to know what they're looking for in terms of functionality. We don't want them to overthink user interface and, you know, how it's going to work. If someone tells us what they're looking to do and not, this is how you're going to navigate the site, this is how you're going to upload, and this is going to, you know, work like this. That's where, you know, that's a perfect case. Just be flexible and always assume that your 1.0 site is not going to be the way it's going to end up.
Okay. Who did I start with last time? Kath? Kath?
She never wrote. She
never. Okay, so it's your turn now, right?
Yeah, so I would have taken a vacation before starting. I haven't had a vacation since launching SlideShare. But no, seriously, we launched with an invitation system, so it wasn't open, and we would definitely do that differently. Because basically what happened was that we were supposed to launch at 7 in the morning, and we didn't realize that Michael Arrington meant 7 on the East Coast, so it went out before we were quite ready, and we had this invite system that required us to basically approve every user. So there's like these thousands of people pouring in, and we have the screen full of people to approve invites. So the first thing we did after launching was to write a script to say check all and then say approve. So I would do that differently. The other thing I would do differently would be to basically allow private sharing right from the beginning. So SlideShare, when it launched, it only had, everything was public on the site. And right on the first day, we had this this interesting incident where I was reading some blog post, and somebody's like, you know what, there's this company that has put up their business plan, you know, their whole funding situation, what's happening on SlideShare. So I go and look at the SlideShare, and I realize that it's the, at least the username is of the CEO of this quite well-known Web 2.0 startup. So I think maybe it's somebody impersonating him. I go and look at the email address. The email address is from that company, and it's the name of the CEO. So I email him and say, do you realize that this is public? He's like, oops. Then what he did was he uploaded another, he replaced the SlideShare and put some like bogus numbers there just to fool people. So on the first day we had that, and we also had some porn uploaded. So there is PowerPoint porn. So right from the, yes, it does exist. We found out right the first day there are certain kinds of pornography that people like to upload, you know, put on PowerPoint.
Well, what kind is that?
Linear.
You mean little stop action video? Uh-huh.
So basically, you know, allow people the ability to upload things, but they just want to keep to themselves. And that's what we would do differently.
Okay. So now, you know, we now know what you would do differently. If you look back over the history of your sites or your, you know, whatever you're doing, can you pick like the one or two key factors that made you successful? And I'll start with Catherine.
Oh, gee.
Besides pissing off Oprah.
Pissing off Oprah, yeah. I think the one of the things was definitely moving offline and into other platforms. That definitely was one of our big factors. I wrote a book that was published by a big publisher, and anyone who's ever worked with a major publisher and who's ever gone from offline or online to offline know that they have sort of issues understanding what we sort of do online and how to really capture that. So I think the second thing I would do would be probably to, oh gosh, that's such a good question. I wish I wouldn't have started
first. I'm a good moderator. What can I say?
You're wonderful.
Very modest.
Very modest. But I think
wait till you see me come out of my shell.
Yes, I would have become friends with Guy sooner. That probably would be easier.
Oh, please. Next.
So wait, are we back on what we would do differently?
No.
What worked out? Okay, all right. What's worked out really well for me, and it's not really anything I've come up with and been clever about, is just the way, like, we laugh and joke, like, okay, I'm this Twitter poster child, but it's not really Twitter. Twitter's like a channel through which I'm sending out Utters and Seismics and Quicks and all different media, Flickr, Twittergrams. I mean, any toy that goes in that sandbox I've pretty much played with. And what happens is in all those different media, I'm not setting out to make audience-worthy media ever. Like, I was driving home from my grandmother's nursing home after being able to let my father see her and decide to come up and see her before she died, thank God, thanks to Quick on video. But I was driving home after that. I turned the live streaming camera on and I jammed it in my windshield. And for half an hour, it was just the road. It was nothing. And yet, for some reason, a few friends dropped by and said encouraging things, and I saw the chat later, and it was really nice. Like, we're so hung up on this TV and movie model these various little tools, and if you play with them and you're not too worried about, I need to build my brand and get something back and da-da-da-da-da, the exposure, I mean, the face-to-face exposure on Seismic, there are two amazing women in technology, Kathy Brooks and Hallie Suit, who both just randomly seeing my goofy little pointless Seismic videos reached out to me and in a very heartfelt way mentored me, introduced me to people they know who are just incredible minds. And again, I won't be, you know, that guy and just sit here and drop names, but somehow the human connections that are now possible and the very serendipitous and very random things, those are what has made this happen for me and will make something happen for you if you play with it, you know, whatever tool it is.
Okay. Christine?
So one of the things I never have seen anybody talk about before is something we do right at Boxeneros, which is we stay two steps ahead of volunteer burnout. When you have this really wonderful, generous community, you think they're going to be around there for you forever. But the fact is people get tired or their lives get busy. You need three times as many volunteers as you think you need to do, and you always have to be, you know, keeping your eye open for new talent at all times. Because people do things because they're passionate about it, but people grow up and change and do new things, and it just, it's life. So staying about three steps ahead of the people you're leaning on, because they're gonna go wander off. The other thing I think is very important is to not be proud. I think being a publisher or a community manager or CEO is a lot like being a restaurant manager, which I used to think was a cool job. It's like, yeah, you get to wear the suit, you know, instead of the apron, and you get to handle the bank, which is really hot. But then when the dishwasher doesn't come in, you're the guy who washes the dishes, you know, in your suit. Or you get to chop the vegetables, and it's totally that way. I'm like, the East Coast will call me at 6 a.m. at home to ask about a credit card bill, you know, what am I going to do? Eventually I'll be able to outsource some of that stuff, hopefully, as we start to become actually financially viable. And I do complain about our beautiful customers. And when Engine Yard goes down, which they did a couple times, but they're still better than Joyent. They just, you know, we go ahead and I have to tell these people you went down. They're like, I hate that. I hate saying, I'm sorry, but they went down. But you got to eat it. You just got to eat it. Just like when you have to say, I'm sorry the kitchen burned your food. It's the same thing. So I'd say just going into it, don't think it's all sex and glamour and hanging out with Guy. It's, we went down again.
Am I the glamour or the sex? That's what you call TMI on Twitter.
We'll talk later, Guy. My husband's at home.
Okay, Erica.
Okay, so when we finally got things right at OpMom, I think it was really the culmination of a lot of research. We looked out at all the other mommy networks and what they were doing, and what we found was it was a lot of mommy talk. And you'd see these like flame wars of like the lactators versus the breastfeeders. And we didn't want to be that. We wanted to be something different. and so at OpMom, you find that you don't just have mommies talking about kids or mommies talking about being a mom. There are a lot of people on OpMom that don't have kids. They actually create mom circles for their pets. And they talk about their pets. So we've created a really nice platform that allows them to really find what they love, find what they're passionate about, find other people that are passionate about the same thing, and create a little bit of a community. The communities are small, and it's nice. So OpMom isn't just OpMom. It's OpMom with all these small mommy circles built in where they're not just talking about mommy stuff.
Okay.
So that's nice.
Aaron?
I'm a developer view again.
Yeah, developer view.
All right. So get your clients to talk about you. Get a top 10 blogger to mention you on their blog, maybe. You know, we had a couple days later, it was like the OMG, Stephen Colbert is on line 4. What's going on? it was like that. So, I mean, for us, it's just get people talking about what you're doing and make sure that they're talking to a different group.
But don't you think most clients don't want to reveal that it's...
Some of them, yeah. That's nudge them. I mean, put it in your contract. So
put it in the contract that they have to reveal?
Well, yeah, or you're going to reveal, or you know what? Ideally, you're just doing a good enough job that they will. But, you know, there are certainly people who think that they want to keep the development behind the curtain.
So is your business basically a referral business?
Yeah, I don't think we've ever really had an outbound sales team.
Okay. I think we have 10 minutes, so let's take some questions from the audience. I believe there are mics over there and over there. So step up.
Am I the only one?
I'm.
Oh, here you go.
You're on.
Ada Rooney on Twitter. So hello, Pistachio. Hey. Hello, Eric O'Grady. Hello, New Media Jim. My son is over here. He wanted me to come up to the mic. So he was wanting to say something. But you guys have done some amazing things, and I definitely want to talk and get together with some of you guys. And I know this is like all a woman panel, and the inevitable question women is, you know, how have you found it in this, in the web, the internet, the social space with the women? Like, I have my opinion, and I love Twitter. It's just great. And I was tweeting constantly about this for those who are on Twitter. Well, how is it? How do you feel that's affected you guys?
It's really interesting because there used to be a really terrible stigma about being a mommy blogger, and people didn't want to be labeled as a mommy blogger. And I think you see this really interesting dynamic that's changing. And now being a mommy blogger is really cool and hip because people in the outside world have realized how much spending power moms have, and that there's a lot of power in getting their attention if you can. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of interesting. And I think that it's having these networks makes it easier for people to really connect and relate to each other.
I think what has happened with me, because I'm both a woman and I'm also African American, which creates a whole different sort of dynamic.
Being a woman but color is...
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Are you a mom too?
I'm not a mom, no, but I can take your kids if you want. I like kids.
Oh. Are you offering to bear my kids?
No, my husband's
here. Because that's a little forward.
I think you said babysit.
Well, even at South by Southwest.
Hey, my son is here, guys.
We can talk about funding. But, you know, I just came to a point where I just didn't care anymore about what men in tech thought of me and what I was doing. Most people have totally discounted fashion. And most women sort of sites without realizing is that we're where the money is at. Women make the purchasing decisions.
I haven't realized that.
Our CPMs are through the roof. I think if people knew how much money we were getting, they would probably collapse in the middle of this conference. So
what's your CPM?
Our CPMs range from $10 to $25.
Wow.
Some even more for some of the videos. And that's because our click-through rates are about 5 to 6 times higher than the industry standard.
Are you using an ad network rep kind of thing? Are you selling it yourself? How are you doing it?
We work with a lot of different people. Like, we work with Glam, and I know everyone knows about Glam. But we have a little bit of a different relationship with Glam. We're not exclusive by any stretch of the imagination. I refuse to sign any exclusive agreement with anyone, mostly because I don't have to. And that will be my suggestion to everyone. If you don't have to sign an exclusive agreement when it comes to your ads, don't. Most likely you won't have to do that, even with some of the big sort of ad companies.
Okay.
I think one thing I can say is that, you know, especially for me, because I was a pretty early site in the category. So it's like I kind of started Style Diary and, you know, like I said, nobody really knew what social networking was. And I have to be honest with you, like, I have had nothing but amazing response from the tech industry. Like, I have so many supportive VC people, mentors. I mean, I don't know if that answers your question, but I think, like, in terms of being a woman in tech, it's like it doesn't seem any different than any other business to me. I'm still there to come and kick some butt, so.
You deal with the same shit.
Yeah, it's like, exactly, it's the same shit.
No, that's great. Now, just before I go, I just want to obviously plug Guy's All Top Moms. You know, he put, I guess, Erica O'Grady in my blog, which is Entrepremusings, is one of the mommy bloggers up there, which is great, and I've been seeing some traffic from that, so.
Yay.
This guy.
Yeah.
There's. And, so self-plug before I go. See if you have a company called Babelsoft, and we make web and mobile applications for new parents.
All right. Plug away.
There's one. Can I say one thing towards her comment, though? I mean, as an entrepreneur, I would walk into that Starbucks on Sand Hill Road, and I know you know it, and it would be all these guys in blue shirts and tan pants talking to all these VCs in blue shirts and tan pants, and I would get so scared. I'm like, I don't have a blue shirt, man. I don't have Dockers. And I'd be like, do I even belong here? And then I would say my mantra to myself, 75 cents. And then I'd get so angry, I'd walk in, and I started wearing heels. I started just going, you know what? I'm going to look completely different. I'm going to act completely different because friggin' 75 cents to a dollar.
What is 75 cents?
That's what women.
Women on average get paid 75 cents for equal work to the dollar that men get paid.
That's why I mentioned.
There's also fewer of us in Wikipedia.
Don't get me started about Wikipedia. There's a difference for women in technology. Where are the women rock stars in Wikipedia?
Well, you have to date Jimmy Wales, right? Isn't that the key? No.
There is a skanky underbelly, and that is, there are a lot of sexual expectations put on women in life generally, which is fine. Sex is great, but some of the ones put on women, especially in tech, are really not that healthy. And, you know, there are tons of ways, if you're building a brand as a woman, there are tons of ways you can build a brand and get attention that I just don't do. I joke around my friends. I'm like, oh, that's funny, but not my brand. And you know, I've had Penelope Trunk last night at dinner was like, well, you know, if you use that, you get more readers. I'm like, yeah, well, but I'm not looking for that kind of attention. So you really have to walk a line. And you can use it to your advantage because all those guys in blue and khaki are just blending into a sea and you pop out. But it's a line to walk. It's real.
Okay. You guys done?
I know.
And
cat fight, yeah.
No, but I was also shocked to hear the kind of sexual, you know, obnoxiousness that Penelope has to put up in her comments and delete. Yeah. And it's weird a couple times on Twitter, you know, someone follows you, you click through back when I had time to do that. One dude was just following 700 women.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He went through Twitter and found 700 women to follow and no men.
Block.
And so that's a little weird. And so I can be like, oh, I blocked him. But hello, it's Twitter. You just go to the website. Anybody can see it at any time. So that is a little weird to know when I'm oversharing my life. But that's my choice, and that's what I'm doing, and there's cost. You just have to know.
What was that guy's screen name?
I think they should.
Scobalizer, right? Over here.
Saki something?
Yeah, right.
How you doing, guys? My name's Brad Garland. I run a little social information sharing site geared towards actually bankers in the banking industry called Banktastic. And yeah, so, but what's interesting is what I want to hear from you guys is about what you think the value of your community is, because I don't think any of my guys are in here, but I've already been requested a couple times to get bought, and they were really not seeing any sort of value into the community because I don't have advertising or anything like that yet. We're like 3 months into this thing. So I'm just curious from your perspective. I mean, investors aren't seeing value, and I honestly just don't want to sell the site at all. And I think I'm just going to tell them to screw off. But I'm just curious from y'all's perspective. What is that value to you?
So just to kind of, I think community, I mean, all these social sites, it's really important. But just to share a story, I was talking to a VC the other day, and I used the word community. And he's like, now I need to tell you why the word community makes me and all of the VCs puke. And he said, it makes us think of this small bunch of people who are very passionate, but it cannot scale. So that's probably the VC perspective. But I think community is everything. And it's not just the conversation. It's every, like, the actions on the side, the way that people are interacting. And I think maybe what you need to do is to kind of frame the system in a way so that you can also convince people that it can scale. So I think that's kind of the VC perspective, that community makes them feel like a small group of very passionate people, and it won't scale. So.
And also maybe do some things offline. I mean, we get requests to be bought, and I talk with Patricia about this all the time. We actually have people offering to give us money to invest at least like every 2 weeks or so. And one of the things that they said to help sort of define value is the fact that we're offline. That, you know, I sold 25,000 plus books. That's not something that you know, you can really sneeze at. Like, people actually went offline to buy these books. I took my community offline. So I think if you can demonstrate a way that you can move people rather than just signing up on your site, but to even an event, even something where you can show that you can move this community, that also
totally
like shows value, I think, to investors.
Having sold a site in a community, I can say we had so many offers in the 2 years that I owned the site for 3 years, but in 2 years' time, I can't even tell you, like, huge people, you know, would comment.
Man,
like,
I don't.
But
it was, all these emails must be getting stuck in my spam folder because I am not getting any offers. What's the story here?
I think that says something. But yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah,
but,
wait till you see where Style Diary is on Alta.
I have seen where Style Diary is on Alta. But nobody cared about the community. Not one person that wanted to buy us really thought that was the thing. They wanted the brand. They wanted us. And they wanted the platform. So I think the three things that I would recommend is, I mean, community is important because that's really an audience. That's really all community is an audience. So, you know, with us, I mean, every single person, what they looked at was, what was the three things we had? Did we have a good technology platform? Which we didn't. It wasn't .NET. It was really old. But did we have a good team? And we did. And did we have a good brand? And we did. So I think the best thing you can do is you can keep building that community and build that audience and hammer it, but hammer the site. I was always all over everything. Press, VC. I found Guy. I don't know how he finds everybody else, but I found him. So, you know, I mean, I think that's the thing to do is, like, focus on building the brand, building your position in the market, and then just keeping good, knocking out good content and making a sticky site.
Okay, Christine, we're looking for a Christineism here.
I know, she's moving. Yeah.
I just can't believe that you have a community of bankers and you can't find investors. Yeah. Are you talking to stupid people? I mean, for example, LinkedIn has better demographics than the Wall Street Journal. They're in the black. They know who their community is. Friggin' Boxes and Arrows, which is a teensy tiny insy bincy design magazine, charges double the normal job posting rate because it's the only way you can find these people. If you know these people and they're bankers, then people should be very, very excited to give you lots and lots of money because these guys, you can't reach them any other way. And community is one of the only places where people actually listen. They turn their ears back on.
Right.
So go get Guy later. Prove he's not one of the dumb ones.
Or but don't raise.
Bankers don't necessarily get the web.
You know, that's the other thing, too, is I didn't raise. My site was private the whole time. Everything I made myself, you know? So if you can bootstrap it and you can keep it lean like we did.
Well, actually, none of you have venture capital, right? Is that true?
Uh-uh. No.
We have some angel investors.
Okay, so there's some angel money. Everybody else is self-funded?
Yeah.
Have you asked your community? Because you have a community of bankers. I just thought about that. You might want to ask your community because they're probably investors in
there. I'm actually afraid to run them off, to be honest, because if I'm looking at, you know, someone buying us out essentially, then, you know, that might run them off because I can't really trust in this community. So, I mean, I'm full disclosure.
Yeah, because they can get fickle like that. I don't like to tell them that kind of stuff either, but yeah.
Well, thank you.
We've been told to cut it off, but we're not because there's no panel. I mean, there's... What is there in this room after this?
Much.
They need to set up? Who needs to set up?
I have a flight.
That's why you pay those guys $200 an hour, no? This is you, Austin a union town or is this?
It's not union.
It's not union? It's union? Not union.
No.
Oh, not union. Well, screw you guys. Okay,
we'll take.
Oh, they cut off. See?
That is so
don't piss off the guy at the audio board, man. I'm shutting the lights. Huh?
God. Oh.
Okay, so we're gonna take your last question because you know I don't know why.
Because you rock.
Because I rock. That's right, baby.
So my name is Michelle Greer, and I'm new to all of this. I don't know if you know me, but
hi, Michelle.
Hi. I like things like Twitter because I Twittered a couple friends and we're going to meet for lunch. And that was just a matter of like three or four Twitters and all of a sudden I've got a lunch gang and that's really cool. I got in on this whole scene because my friend Lynn invited me to a party and I wanted to go because there was free food. So it wasn't like I was like, I'm going to advance my career. You know, I'm going to meet all these great people and become an internet celebrity. It was like, no, there are free spring rolls at Triumph Cafe. That's really cool. So aside from offering buffets to people and, like, bringing them in, how do you bring in – like, I get made fun of a lot because people are like, oh, you're such a geek for Twitter. That's ridiculous. Why do you do that? Oh, LinkedIn. How do you bring in people who don't – who look at technology as, like, a geek thing? How do you bring the people in to say, like, this is a means for communication so that you can make a lunch date with, like, 12 people in, like, four tweets. Like, how do you bring them in?
cut stuff down to really, really simple, what techies would call a use case and what I call the slide on the playground, something they can get and play and go do to start.
Yeah. And also, just to piggyback on that, I think this is my first time at South By, and one of the things I found to be a little disappointing is how much technology is developed and then the user is thought of, rather than thinking of the user then developing technology. Mm-hmm. So my question or my statement would be, first you need to think of the user and develop technologies that are actually useful for people. Like my readers, they're not going to Twitter. I'm not going to even force them to Twitter. I'm not going to try to teach them to Twitter. It's just not going to happen, right? However, if Twitter or a form of Twitter was developed with them in mind, understanding their constraints of being moms and working women and so forth and so on, I'm sure that they would naturally use that sort of technology. So I think technology has to start to think of the user first, particularly when it comes to women. It's a little bit different than dealing with the male space.
Well, there's actually a pyramid for that. And at the bottom, when you're developing something, you want something to be functional and aesthetically pleasing. And then above that, you want it to be convenient. And then above that, pleasurable and meaningful. And if you can hit all of those, then you're going to have something that's going to really give value, and people are going to use it.
Or just use Facebook. Geeks are not Facebook. Normal people are. I mean, MySpace, it's the same. Twitter is for geeks right now, not Facebook. To say that people don't get technology, I don't buy that at all. I'm just waiting to find my mother on Facebook. You know, so...
You don't know who she is, you mean? I don't know. Okay, so you got any closing remarks, Christina? Because I just love you, Christina. I love your comment. I never met you before
today. Oh,
gonna
ask me back then? Excellent. Yeah. So I just wish both my parents are on Facebook. I wish I had your dad. We did our Christmas list on Google Docs. I'm afraid that my family is that geeky. When people say my mom can use it, I'm like, so. But what I want to say is that you mentioned LinkedIn. I mean, it was an influencer strategy. Find somebody who gets what you're doing and make them so damn happy, you know, that they'll just keep telling it to everybody else. You don't want to be explaining your service. If you're explaining your service, well, you don't scale. So, you know, find the people who understand it and let them Twitter about it and blog about it. I mean, my God, you're not getting any stock from
me. Are you listening, Evan? Where are you?
Stock for this girl. She's working for you. So,
I think it's just keep it simple. Like in hockey, they say the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. Just keep it simple.
Okay. So I'm going to
watch Kathy's speech from yesterday because she nails your question.
Okay. So I am going to do. I just want to reiterate that if you ever wanted to meet New Media Jim, this is him up here. And if you ever want to meet Jeremy from Trend Hunter is a very cool site where they put up all the coolest trends from around the world. That's Jeremy from Trend Hunter over there. What's your Twitter name? Trend Hunter. Okay, so that's Trend Hunter. And that's New Media Jim.
Follow Trend Hunter.
Yeah. Follow Trend Hunter. And I guess we're going to... You guys want to eat, right? Okay, so please join me in thanking the panel. Thank you very much for being here today. Thank you.